Welcome back to the Stimulating Stuff Podcast. I'm your host, the highly employable and ready to work Rich Vogel, and today I'm stimulating your job search. Before we get into that, here's a fun fact. I'm kind of an outer space nerd. I love to watch planets, constellations, and generally just look up at the sky and ponder the big questions in life. Anyway, back in 2017, there was a total solar eclipse that came across the United States. They called it the Great American Eclipse, and I was well positioned to see it from the top of a mountain in western North Carolina. There I was with my telescope and solar lens, taking photographs of the burgeoning eclipse. I got the most amazing photos. The last one I took right before the total eclipse, there was just a sliver of sun left. And that's when the clouds rolled in and completely obscured my view of the sun and the eclipse. If you're watching this on YouTube, you can see a photo of that last sliver of sun that I got to see. I was so deflated after that experience, though, because the clouds came in, I totally missed the eclipse, just totally devastated. My only option was to wait until 2024. So there was obviously another total solar eclipse earlier this week, because it's now 2024, the one I was waiting for, and for this one I traveled to Zionsville, Indiana, not far from Indianapolis, to experience this extremely rare event with good friends. It definitely didn't disappoint. I mean, witnessing a total solar eclipse is probably one of the more transformative experiences you can have in life. Truly awe-inspiring. You know, I keep hearing from people, oh, I saw the eclipse. It was like 90% covered. Let me just make one thing crystal clear. There's simply no comparison. Seeing a 90% eclipse is like winning $5 on a scratch-off, and seeing a total solar eclipse is like winning Powerball. It is so dramatically different. It's just not worth attempting to put into words. You have to experience it for yourself, and while photos and video can never really fully do justice to this experience, I'm sharing a photo on YouTube here that I took through my Vixen telescope. I guess I have to share my condolences to anyone who attempted to experience this rare event and had it obscured by clouds. I've been there and it really sucks. The next total solar eclipse that's going to pass through the contiguous United States isn't going to be for another 20 years until August 22nd, 2044. But unfortunately, you're going to have to travel to Montana, North Dakota, or South Dakota to see it. Boo. Okay, enough of that. Let's jump into the job search stuff. I was really happy to hear from so many of you after last week's pod. It sounds like a lot of you went through similar experiences being unemployed, and many of you shared stories of coming out on the other side, happy and satisfied, and in entirely new careers for some of you. Thanks for sharing your stories. You really give me and the other listeners hope. Searching for a job is a big topic. I should probably tell you, I'm going to cover a lot of subtopics, but I'm also mindful of your time, so I can't possibly dive too deep into this. If there's anything you'd like me to revisit with more depth in a future episode, feel free to send me an email, which I always include at the end of each episode, and I'll be happy to circle back. So, whether you're just starting out or eyeing a major career pivot or seeking that next step up the career ladder, today's topics will definitely apply to you, and regardless of what profession or business sector you work in. Many of you already know I'm presently looking for a job, and I'm somewhere between that next step up the professional ladder and a major career pivot. That part is to be determined. One thing I can tell you is the whole job search thing is extraordinarily complicated. As just a small example, I recently saw one of those polls that people post on LinkedIn, and the question that was asked was, what is your greatest challenge as a job seeker? 79% of respondents said just getting an interview, securing an interview. 15% said scaling through interviews, meaning going from the first round to the second round. 4% said generating a professionally written resume, and the other 2% answered other. So interesting that almost 80% of people saying that their biggest challenge as a job seeker is just getting an interview. And I can certainly understand that, something I'll come back to. You know, I've had exactly one formal job interview in my professional career, and that was 15 years ago. And that might be the only one in my life, actually. I've only made a couple of job changes in the last 15 years, and I was recruited for those roles. I've certainly interviewed and hired a lot of people, though, so at least I know something about the other side of the equation. The main reason I'm talking about the job search process today is because I'm neck deep in it and learning so much that might just help you. I'm finding that today's job market is just so overwhelming. And the whole job application process, it's as if Tinder and Squid Games had a baby. What do I mean by that? Well, first, even if you don't use dating apps like Tinder, I think it's common knowledge that these dating apps are populated by a ton of men looking to meet a woman, probably any woman, knowing dudes. But many of these women are interested in just a small handful of guys, maybe even one. So no one else in that large pool of people even gets the time of day. Also, any interest the men do get tend to come from fake profiles. So it feels like a massive waste of time, and the really nice, genuine men just wishing they could sit down with one of those women and just share who they are. If only they had that opportunity. They just know the other person would be interested. But it doesn't work like that. And that's why the job market is like a dating app. There are fake job posts that come from bots. There are bots that are applying for jobs. And there are bots screening applicants. It's all fake. And the only real way to get an interview is to use your network to get your resume in front of human eyes. On the other side, like Squid Games, it's an absolute bloodbath of elimination by robots before you even get a chance to make a case for why someone should hire you. In other words, if you're applying for jobs online, you're basically dead on arrival. Before I wised up, I applied for a job a few weeks ago for which there were 70,000 applicants. Fortunately for the human resources professionals out there, and unfortunately for job applicants, all job applications and resumes are screened by AI these days, and only a select few get viewed by human eyes. They might interview 10 people in the first round, but your odds of getting that interview are infinitesimally small. So you got to know how to play the game and avoid the trap of swiping right on everything, because you don't want to waste someone's time and you don't want to waste your own time on a job that you don't want. So anyway, today we're dedicating some time to navigating the job search process. It's a path filled with its own set of challenges and rewards, and I'm here to walk you through each step, ensuring at least that you're equipped with knowledge, strategies, and confidence to secure your dream job. So let's dive in. I've been telling people for years, and it should be common sense, but you really should make sure you secure your next job before you exit your current role, if at all possible. I realize it isn't always possible, but the last thing you want is unemployment, the financial chaos that extends from it, and the gap in your resume that will make it even more difficult to find a job. Now, I'm skipping ahead a bit, but go out and interview, find that perfect match, negotiate the terms of your contract, and be candid with them about your need to give notice in your present employment situation. Make sure you build time in to make that transition. Your future employer will actually respect your need to give notice because it's just more evidence that they're hiring a considerate person. When it comes to your career, burning bridges rarely lights the way. That's true for both employers and employees. So everyone should take heed. Always exit a job gracefully. When the time is right, give notice to your present employer in the form of a letter. You always want to give at least 2 weeks notice or more if necessary, particularly if it's in your contract. Use the letter to express your gratitude for your time with the company. Show appreciation for people who supported and empowered you, and feel free to name them and share a few details about what you gained from the experience. Let them know when you anticipate your last day will be, and express your interest in continuing to work fastidiously through the last day. But let's step back a bit and talk about finding that next role. In my mind, and a lot of what I've learned, is that you really need to focus your intention on networking. It's really an important first step. In fact, it's most definitely a critical component to the job search. I think, you know, the very idea of networking can evoke a range of emotions. For some, it's an exciting opportunity to meet new people and explore possibilities. For others, it's daunting, riddled with anxiety. But I'll tell you, effective networking is one of the most powerful tools in your job search arsenal. It's about making connections, sure, but it's also about building enduring relationships that can open doors to opportunities you never knew existed. So I'll tell you what I did as a first step anyway, is I think it's a good idea to leverage your existing network. It's usually broader than you think. So we're talking about family, friends, alumni from your schools, former colleagues, and even past supervisors. Reach out to them, let them know you're on the lookout. You might be surprised by how willing people are to help you or connect you with someone who can. Sometimes a simple conversation can lead to a formal referral or even a valuable lead. Hey, you know, worst case scenario, you stay in touch with old contacts and you spend a lot of money on coffee. But I will tell you that I've made some really excellent connections in networking, people that I never would have met otherwise just by an introduction from a friend or colleague. So it goes a long way. Beyond that, you want to expand beyond your immediate circle. So this is stepping a little bit outside of your comfort zone, but it can lead to new and unexpected opportunities. You could start by leveraging platforms like LinkedIn to connect with people in your field, or at least in the field that you want to enter. If you do use LinkedIn, I would highly recommend a premium job seeker account. You know, when you do reach out to make new connections on LinkedIn, I think it's good to send a personal message with your connection request. And don't be afraid to be specific about why you're interested in connecting and what you're looking for. Beyond LinkedIn, you could attend industry meetups, join professional associations, and definitely don't overlook the power of online communities and forums related to whatever field you want to work in. If you go on Reddit, for example, there's people engaging about jobs in every field you can imagine. It's just a treasure trove of information. When you attend these events, these industry events, or interact with people online, it's a good idea to have some form of an elevator pitch ready, sort of a brief overview of who you are, what you do, and what you're seeking. Just remember that the goal isn't to land a job on the spot, but to forge new connections that could lead to opportunities down the line. A couple more notes about networking. It's not just about what you can get. It's also about what you can give. And perhaps you can offer insight into, you know, a shared challenge, or maybe you can have a contact that, you know, the person that you're talking to could benefit from. Offering value in a conversation makes you memorable and someone who others want to be connected with. So think of it as not what you can get from somebody else, but how you can share your connections and your networks and your resources. When you are networking, it's a good idea to follow up. So after meeting someone new, send them a personalized email or LinkedIn message and just express your appreciation for their time and, you know, reiterate your interest in staying in touch. I think this lays the groundwork for a relationship that can grow over time. Beyond the networking, I mean, I got to talk about recruiters. I can't tell you how important it is to connect with a recruiting firm. Look, you're not going to get through the AI bots that screen resumes. I don't care how qualified you are for the job or how good your resume is. Everyone that I've spoken to has told me, don't waste your time applying online. Personally, I feel like these systems are designed to eliminate people who don't use recruiters. The fact is, recruiters are very well connected. They know who to contact and how to contact them. They have great advice for crafting your resume and cover letter, and they will work for you to find the perfect company or career match. Why? Because their reputation is as a valuable source of highly qualified people, and it's built upon their ability to refer people who, one, are right for the job, and two, will stay with the company for a long time. I've not met any recruiters that get paid by the job seeker, so the service should be free to you. Recruiters tend to make their money from the hiring company, sort of as a referral fee. So definitely reach out to recruiting firms and consider looking for recruiters who specialize in the field in which you want to work. Be ready to discuss your background, career goals, etc. And you also want to have a draft of your resume ready for them to review. Speaking of which, let's move on to crafting a resume and a cover letter, because it's an art and a science. So these documents are your first impression, the first opportunity to stand out from the crowd. They need to speak to who you are as a professional, and they critically need to resonate with the person reading them on the other side. Just remember, anytime you put something in writing, you are communicating, and communication is 100% about the receiver of the communication. So your resume will speak to them for you, but they need to receive, understand, and appreciate the content. I want you to remember something that is a little off topic here, but it is really important in life in general. Your written communication is the best way for you to showcase your education and intelligence. If you do it well, people will think highly of you immediately. If you're a poor writer, poor communicator, people will always question your education and intelligence. I can't stress this enough. And it's something that I hear all the time as well, and it's something that I teach. Sure, there are services that can improve your writing, like Grammarly and ChatGPT, but you need to learn the skill of written communication, because it makes or breaks things like landing a job, securing a contract, maintaining friendships, and so much more. All right, I'll get off my soapbox. So think of your resume as a professional highlight reel. It's not about listing every job you've ever had, but about showcasing the experiences and skills most relevant to the job you want. You want to use bullet points to make it easy to read, and start each with a strong action verb wherever possible, and quantify your achievements. So, did you increase sales? Did you improve efficiency or reduce costs? By how much? Those numbers speak volumes. The general rule of thumb is to limit your resume to one page, two at the absolute most, and never more than that. But keep in mind that the average hiring manager will spend less than 20 seconds looking at your resume before making a decision. So keep it short, focused, and use a layout that's easy to scan. I'll also say you shouldn't use Microsoft Word resume templates and never include your photo in a resume if applying in the United States. That may be standard overseas, but I'm learning that these two faux pas The first being using a Microsoft Word resume template, and second one including your photo. Those faux pas are almost always the quickest way to get your resume excluded from consideration. What about cover letters? Your cover letter is your chance to tell the story behind your resume. Why are you passionate about the field? What draws you to this company? How do your skills and experience align with what you're looking for? This is your space to make a personal connection, so you use it wisely. Address the letter to a specific person whenever possible, and always conclude with a call to action, like expressing your hope for an interview. You know, I've read different opinions on what you should write in your cover letter. It reminds me a bit of America Ferrera's monologue in the film Barbie, if you've seen it. In writing a cover letter, you have to be interested, but not too interested. You have to be different than the other applicants, but not too different. You have to be serious, but not too serious. You have to brag, but be humble. Be detailed about your background, accomplishments, and passions, but please keep it short. You have to be overqualified for the position, but not too overqualified, and don't fudge your record. Always stand out and always be grateful, but never forget the system is rigged. So find a way to get over that and the fact that no one really reads anything that you put your heart and soul into. Get over it, but always be grateful. Sounds just like Barbie, and so true in applying for jobs. Anyway, so you got the resume, you got the cover letter. Letters of recommendation are really important. I think they're a secret weapon. They offer a third-party validation of your skills, work ethic, and achievements. A couple thoughts on how to approach them. First one is choose the right people, the correct people, to write them. So you want to select individuals who not only know you well, but also hold a reputable position in your industry or field. Look for someone who's a good writer and communicator, someone who's highly respected, or at least respectable, and widely known for being honorable and truthful. Definitely avoid asking for letters of recommendation from people who tend to have negative reputations, or who will speak negatively about you simply because they're just a negative person or a jealous person or a narcissistic person. The point is, find the right people. It could be a former boss, a mentor, a senior colleague, or even people that reported to you. These are people who have witnessed your growth or your leadership firsthand and can speak to your potential with genuine enthusiasm. When you're approaching these folks who are going to be writing your letter of recommendation, it's a good idea to make it as easy as possible for them. So provide them with a copy of your resume, if you think it's helpful, the job description you're applying for, and any key points you'd like them to highlight. You might even suggest specific projects or achievements that they can speak to. This not only helps them to craft a more targeted letter, but also ensures that their recommendation aligns with the narrative that you're building through your other application materials. I'll tell you what I did here, which is a little bit different. I asked people to write letters that were a bit more generic with no specific addressee and speak to what they observed in their relationship working with me, both within the company and outside, meaning in the profession in general. I don't think it's fair to ask somebody if you're going to be applying for 30 or 40 or 50 different jobs to write that many letters of recommendation. So I went with the approach of asking people to write something a bit more generic. I hope it doesn't backfire. Good idea to always give people plenty of time, weeks if possible, to write a letter. Remember, they're doing you a favor. And after they've submitted the recommendation, don't forget to send them a thank you. It could be just a nice little email, could be a thank you note, but at least say thank you. It's not just polite, but it keeps your network warm and engaged. Okay, so what about the application process? I can tell you it feels like sending a resume into a black hole, but with a strategic approach, I think you can increase your visibility and chances of getting that interview anyway. So first, you're probably going to find yourself applying to a lot of jobs. Even if it's through a recruiter, there's There's just a lot of no's out there. That's a lot of people are going to say no. And you just have to be okay with that. It's not a big deal. But to get that one, you might have to apply to 100 jobs. It's a good idea to keep a detailed spreadsheet on where and when you've applied, including notes on any follow-ups. This is going to help you stay organized and persistent. For each application, consider tailoring your resume and cover letter to the job description. Highlight the experiences and skills that most closely match with what you're looking for. This customization, and I know I've already said this, but this customization, it really can significantly increase your chances of getting past those applicant tracking systems, or what I call the AI bots, and into the hands of a real person. Definitely has to be tailored to the job. But I really think that the best way to apply for a job is to skip the bots and use a recruiter. It's the difference between waiting in line to get a concert ticket and someone opening the stage door and inviting you into the green room. Here's what I haven't figured out yet, probably most things in life, but suppose there are multiple jobs, different jobs, very different jobs, available within the same very large organization. Is it okay to send very different resumes and cover letters tailored to those jobs? After all, they're going to the same organization. The general advice appears to be yes, it's okay to change, to send in very different resumes, particularly if you're applying online. You do need to get past those bots after all, and it's highly unlikely, even in the end, that the different positions would be screened by the same hiring manager. In a smaller organization, it may be best to tailor your resume to a very specific job and include enough information to demonstrate the breadth of your expertise and tell them you're open to considering other opportunities. And if you're aware of one, I say don't be afraid to name it, because, I mean, you kind of have to go out on a limb, right? Getting hired, getting those interviews, extremely difficult. So share your interest. Apply wisely. It's tempting to apply for every job you see, but focus on quality over quantity. Spend your energy on applications where you can genuinely see yourself fitting in and where you meet at least 75% of the qualifications. And remember, a well-crafted, personalized application is worth more than a dozen generic ones. By the way, I'm coming to find out that, you know, I just mentioned you meet at least 75% of the qualifications. I'm coming to find out that a lot of these job descriptions, they throw everything at the wall. They say, well, these are the minimum qualifications, and it's almost impossible to have those qualifications. And if it were, nobody with those qualifications would be applying for that job. They're just telling you that, like, ideally the person that they hire would be plug and play, would have no learning curve at the job, and they would step in and be able to run the entire company if needed. But they're not hiring somebody to run the entire company. They're just hiring something for somebody for this other position. So the point is, don't be freaked out by the fact that every single job description that you see is going to make you feel like a piece of shit that couldn't possibly qualify for any job ever anywhere with any company. I feel like they're written that way on purpose, maybe to weed out some of the people up front. I don't know. Anyway, persistence is helpful. If you haven't heard back from somebody after a couple weeks, don't be afraid to send a polite follow-up email. I've heard from several hiring managers that one of the ways that they screen people out is if they haven't heard from them, because it shows that they're not genuinely interested. I could also see the other side of it, that some people may say this person's kind of a pain in the butt. They write to me every couple weeks and I still don't have an answer for them. I guess I haven't figured this one out either. You might have to take the temperature of the hiring manager and ask them if it's okay to check back in every few weeks. and go from there. But it shows initiative and can sometimes bring your application back to the top of the pile. All right, what about the interview process? So congratulations, you're one of the 20% of people who actually get an interview. Now it's time to prepare and shine, right? That's your chance to bring your resume to life and show the hiring manager why you're the right person for the job. Definitely research and prepare. So before the interview, you're going to want to go beyond the company's About Us webpage. Dive into recent news articles or press releases and their social media, anything that's available. You really want to understand the company's challenges, their culture, and where they're heading. This will allow you to tailor your responses to their questions and also ask insightful questions that demonstrate your enthusiasm and fit for the role. Never go into an interview without practicing. You don't go into any meeting ever with anybody without practicing and laying out your strategy. But practice makes perfect in an interview. Anticipate common interview questions and practice your responses. Focus on delivering concise, compelling answers that highlight your achievements and how they align with what the company's looking for. And definitely consider practicing with a friend or mentor who can provide constructive feedback. On the day of the interview, I can't stress this enough. You want to dress well. I never make a habit of telling women how to dress, but I will say for a man, wear a suit, and then ladies can figure it out from there. There's a few rare exceptions. You know, I hear in Silicon Valley jobs, you know, people show up in jeans and a t-shirt and nobody cares. But if you want to show somebody you care about a job, and I do not care what the dress code is at the job, you know, if most people wear business casual in the work environment there, still show up in a suit. It shows that you care and that you're serious about the job. Plan to arrive early, bring copies of your resume. And during the interview, be present and engage with your interviewer. Being present is a critical component to emotional intelligence. So ask questions, show enthusiasm, and remember the interview is as much about determining if the company's right for you as it is for them to evaluate you. Speaking of interviews and emotional intelligence, I heard this great story a couple weeks ago. It came from one of my favorite podcasts, which is called Think Fast, Talk Smart, and it's from the Stanford Graduate School of Business. The episode was called From Good to Great, What Makes a Super Communicator? In this episode, the host interviews a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, Charles Duhigg, I think is how you say his name. It's D as in Delta, U-H-I-G-G. Anyway, about what it means to be a super communicator. And so Duhigg is talking about nonverbal communication and laughter. And he tells this story about a psychologist at NASA. And it was the psychologist's job to figure out who was emotionally intelligent and who faked it really, really well. And he said he couldn't do it until he started paying attention to how different people laughed. So this psychologist, he would walk into the room at the beginning of an interview where these applicants were, and he'd be carrying a bunch of papers and wearing an ugly yellow tie. And he would spill the papers all over the place, as if on accident, but he did it on purpose. And then he would start laughing so loud, and he would say, "I can't believe I just did that. Not only that, but my kid made me wear this ugly yellow tie today, and now I look like a clown." And he would pay attention to the candidate who's sitting there, whether they laughed politely or whether they matched his energy and his affect. Because if they matched his energy or affect, they were making an offering. I want to connect with you. Those are people who were good at connection, good at emotional intelligence, good at mirroring. So the point of this isn't to tell you to be emotionally intelligent in an interview. That's not how emotional intelligence even works. But the point is that interviews can take on all shapes and sizes, and not everything is always what it appears to be. You know, I used to do something very similar, subtle tests like this when I was interviewing people, particularly who were going to work in the operating room on my team, because I wanted people on my team who had strong empathy and strong situational awareness, and to take it another step further, strong situational understanding. I know how to test for that, and I've hired some great people as a result. So here's an example. Similar to the NASA psychologist, what I used to do with PhDs, for example, who were applying to work in neuromonitoring, was I'd ask them about their PhD work, and I'd wait until they finish about their second sentence, and then I'd give them various social or body language cues that demonstrate sort of distance or boredom without being rude. My goal was to identify people who could easily read and respond to those social cues and adapt to summarize their PhD research very quickly. It's that social intelligence and situational understanding that's so important to master when you work in an environment like an operating room, and it's not something that's easily trained on the job, so I tested for it in the interview. My advice to you in the interview process is just be yourself. There's no sense in faking and trying to be someone or something else. You want your next career placement to be a good fit and a positive experience. Whatever act you're putting on in the interview, you can't keep it up forever. At some point, you'll revert back to your normal self, and both you and your employer will be miserable because you're trying to be someone you're not, and they hired someone who's different than they thought. So you be you. After the interview, follow up within 24 hours, usually if possible. Send them a personalized thank you email and address it individually to each person you met. I think handwritten notes are nice, but they're not always possible in today's environment. And certainly they wouldn't receive it within 24 hours. But definitely take a moment to express your appreciation for their time. Reiterate your interest in the position and briefly highlight why you're a great fit. So one more thing before I go. I want to let you know that despite the fact that I just restarted this podcast, I'm going to take a little break for a late spring vacation. So there's not going to be any podcasts for the next couple of weeks, but when I come back in the first week of May, I'm going to hit the ground running with episodes on leadership and why the Myers-Briggs test is a scam. Okay, that's it for today. I hope today's information helped you at least a little bit with your job search. Remember, if there's anything that you want me to dive into a little bit more, feel free to send me an email and ask some specific questions. I'll certainly answer them on the air. Job searching is a journey. It's filled with highs and lows. Just stay focused, stay resilient, and most importantly, stay true to yourself and your goals. You've got this. Thank you so much for listening. Please continue sharing this podcast on socials and through word of mouth. And feel free to send me your comments, insights, questions to stimulatingstuffpodcast@gmail.com. I always love hearing from you. I'm Rich Vogel, and that was Stimulating Stuff.